There are six main benefits of a trust over a will. I'll explain next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio with New York Times best-selling author and your host, Doug Andrew.
This is Doug Andrew speaking to you, our incredible national audience, from our three-dimensional wealth studios nestled at the base of the majestic Rocky Mountains. This show is about empowering you, people and organizations that want to optimize their assets, minimize taxes, and empower their authentic wealth. Well, folks, you may be aware I have a YouTube channel. It's called Three Dimensional Wealth, and I have nearly 1,000 educational videos on that channel. It's free when you subscribe. And I have several educational videos about trusts versus wills and what have you. And when I go out in America and speak to audiences, many times I'll frequent the San Francisco Bay Area. And I would say that the majority of my audiences have a trust when I ask them, how many of you have a trust? And they raise their hands. And of course, then I usually say, well, I guarantee you your kids will never read that document except one page that says how much they get. And so then I get their attention. And that's when I teach why they should consider changing the rules of governance on that trust from equal distribution, where when you and your spouse pass away, most trusts just divide it all up, sometimes requiring that you kill the goose laying the golden eggs. You have to sell the assets or the real estate holdings or the business and divide it up equally and dump it in your kid's lap. And it actually ruins about half of the children who get an inheritance. They sit around, when do I get my share? And so that's why I wrote the book Entitlement Abolition. So I recommend that they change the rules to equal opportunity trust instead of equal distribution. I talk about that once in a while on this show. But sometimes people don't even understand or remember why you should have a trust over a will. So let me cover that. And then in the next segment, I'm actually going to talk about how you should hold your bank accounts, your real estate holdings, because most people do not consider what I'm going to teach you there and where you should have your serious cash, your assets, to protect those assets from the negative impact of taxes, inflation, market volatility, and the frivolous lawsuits that sometimes people get involved with. Okay? So there are six main benefits of a trust over a will. When you have a will, and by the way, if you die without a will, the state where you live has a will for you. And most people do not like the way the state is going to administer that will. It's going to go through probate, because you probably heard the saying, where there's a will, there's a, not a way, a probate, okay? Now, probate can be a good thing, but a lot of times probates drag on for a long time. And basically, probate is sort of the legal way for the system, courts, to follow how the assets should be distributed. But in a probate, your children that you want to leave your assets to are like seventh down the list in a probate, okay? I think in order, the federal government gets first chance at any taxes you may owe, and then the state, and then the local county taxes. And then you have the court costs and the attorney fees and the executor fees. And then the creditors come and they can make their claims. If they do not come forward within, I think it's 6 months in most states, they cannot come later. That's one of the advantages of probate, is they have 6 months to come forward. You post a legal notice. And if they don't do that, then they're out of luck. If you do not probate an estate, they could come 15 years down the road and say, oh, you know what, your father who passed away 15 years ago owed me some money, and you would have to defend a lawsuit because you didn't file a probate to get rid of those creditors, okay? But then finally, the children get whatever's left after they go through and clear all of those possible creditors. Well, when you set up a trust, one of the number one advantages is you avoid probate. Okay, basically the estate is settled immediately. Okay, so you avoid probate, which also gives you a few other advantages. Now, people lately have not been concerned about estate tax because, you know, between a husband and a wife, let's say, you can pass on millions of dollars right now before you end up triggering an inheritance tax. The inheritance tax Biden wants to increase from maybe a maximum of around, let's say, 40% up to 67%, because government revenuers love to tax people that are 6 feet under. They can't complain about it, okay? Now, he has also toyed with the idea, because he's got to come up with some tax revenue, of lowering the estate tax threshold clear back down to maybe even just $1 million, that the first million you leave behind is not subject to estate tax. And anything above that, you would pay estate tax on. Now, I don't know if he'll go down clear to $1 million, but back in the 1990s, for example, when it was $1 million, it was $600,000 at one point, but anything over and above that, and they add up everything that you owned, okay, after you die, and everything above that started out at a 37% federal estate tax, and it topped out clear up at, I think, 55% of the time. Biden wants to take it up to 67% and maybe lower that threshold. So what you do is you're able to save on estate tax and an inheritance tax, because when you use a trust, most savvy attorneys will sort of divide up the assets between an A-B trust. Half of it is under the husband and half is under the wife's. Or what I like to do is my wife has a trust and I have a separate trust, and all of the domestic assets are in my wife's trust and all of the business assets are in my trust, so that it sort of doubles the exemption where you would have to start paying an estate tax if you have an estate worth enough to trigger tax. Does that make sense? The third big benefit of a trust is it provides privacy. See, when you have a will that goes through the court system and everybody can look at your assets and look at your business, they can read your will. If you want that kept private, most people choose to use a trust for privacy. Okay. The fourth benefit is because many times you are dividing up the assets that you own, like I just said, about half maybe in the husband and half in the wife's, let's say. That's under an A-B trust, or under many situations, the wife will have a trust and the husband will have a trust. And so you have just those assets in each trust, so that if you got sued for maybe somebody slipped on your porch, or their kids were over and jumping on your trampoline or in your pool, or something happened and they sued you above your liability insurance limits, because they can sue you for whatever in this sue happy society we're in. The most they can wipe you out if you were the negligent one, or you were the one who owned the house or had the house in your trust or that car or whatever, the most they could wipe you out would be hopefully just 50%. But see, that's why people who do not have trust, they own things in joint tenancy, and I'll talk about that in the next segment. So you can cut your liability exposure in half, that if somebody sues you, for everything you're worth, let's say, well, they can only sue you for what is in your trust. They can't sue you for what's in your partner's trust or the portion of your house that's in your spouse's trust. Does that make sense? Now, the fifth big benefit, it preserves the love of the family better. The last thing you want is for your children to be fighting over who gets what. And so it's pretty cut and dried when you set up a trust. Basically, it's divided up, and a lot of times equal distribution trust divided up equally. I believe in equal opportunity trust, that you don't just dump it in their laps. They have to have skin in the game. But the family usually stays together better when you have a trust, because it preserves the love of the family. It's pretty cut and dried how it's going to be distributed, whereas sometimes in a will, you can still name who gets Aunt Effie's vase or Grandpa's watch or whatever, but that's usually done in a will. when you have a trust, you usually have a will also, because that acts like a vacuum cleaner. It sort of sucks up everything that maybe you forgot to put or register under the trust. And a will can name the guardian of your minor children if you die with little children. The last big benefit of a trust is if your spouse died and you remarried, okay, or you died and your spouse remarried, many times if you don't have a trust, then when you pass away, all of your assets go down to your new spouse's children and your children get disinherited. And so a trust sort of preserves the assets to go to your children. It allows you to name that instead of disinheriting them.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
Don't hold your assets in joint tenancy and don't put your children's names on your bank accounts and your deeds. I'll explain next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. Welcome back. This is Doug Andrew, and if you're just joining us, in the previous segment, I was talking about the six main benefits of a trust over a will. Now, you probably can surmise I'm not an attorney. That's true. I do not do legal work, but I do teach advanced continuing education to many CPAs and tax attorneys on how to accumulate, access, and transfer their money totally tax-free. But also, many times I will teach audiences in a simple way why you may want to consider a trust over a will. And so I talked about that in the last segment. You avoid probate. It saves on unnecessary estate tax, inheritance tax, if you have that problem. It provides privacy. It cuts the liability exposure in half if you get sued, if they do it correctly. It preserves the love of the family better, so they're not fighting over who gets what. And it passes your assets to your children, not your new spouse's children. You're not disinheriting your kids if you get remarried after your spouse passes away or what have you, okay? And so those are the six main benefits of why many people should consider a trust over a will. Let's talk about general asset protection in this segment, and I'm going to show you how to protect your assets. So I started out by telling you you should not hold your assets, your bank accounts, the deed to your real estate or your house in joint tenancy. And yet, that's the most common way. Many times when people acquire an asset, they say, oh, you want to set this up in joint tenancy, right? And people just nod their head, and so they open up their bank accounts or whatever, and they own things in joint tenancy, which sounds wonderful. Now, why is it that people get sucked into doing that? It's mainly because you avoid probate. Now, I talked about probate in the last segment. Probate is the process, the legal process, under the jurisdiction of a court that determines who gets what when you die without a will. That's called dying intestate, and the state has a will for you. Or if you have a will, where there's a will, there's a probate, okay? And so I was talking about the process of how when you go through a probate, they have to make sure they clear out any possible creditors first before your children get what you want to leave behind. Any federal taxes, any state, any local, the court costs, the attorney's fees, the executor fees, and then the creditors can make their claims. And then finally, whatever's left over can be distributed among your children, okay? That's what probate does. So people say, I want to avoid that. So they set their assets up under joint tenancy. Why? Because you avoid probate if you die. So if I own something as a joint tenant with my spouse, it's sort of like a joint checking account. A joint checking account is pretty interesting. If I have $1,000 in that joint checking account, I can write out a check for the entire, $1,000. And my wife can write out a check for the entire $1,000. Now, that doesn't mean you each have $1,000. Sometimes, my spouse has tried to write out a check for $1,000 after I've already done it. but see, you both own it all. That's a very interesting concept. You both own it all. So when you own something in joint tenancy and one of you dies, then the other person owns it all. Well, that sounds good. It avoids probate, but it creates another problem. That means whatever your assets are, you own them all and your spouse owns them all. And the government loves to tax things on the first death on everything that person owned and then tax it again unless you have exemptions or what have you. Let's not get into that. But see, when you have things in joint tenancy, people just say it's the easy way to avoid probate because there's no question when the first person dies, the other person gets it, no questions asked. Now, there are certain assets that pass on to a spouse without an estate tax on the first death. After both of you are gone, you have to file a 706 form, I believe is what it's still called, within 9 months with the federal government to see if there's any estate tax due. And the reason why you may have to worry about that in the future is because Biden is hard up for tax revenue, and he may reduce down the threshold from, golly, it's way over $10 million. I don't know what the exact amount is right now. If you have a trust, it doubles. Clear down to maybe a million again. That would be unbelievable to where whatever you leave behind to your non-spousal heirs, you may have to start paying tax, starting out at 40% and topping out at 67%, because that's what it used to be like back in the 1990s, okay? But let's get back to this joint tenancy thing. A lot of times I will have audiences come and I'll say, how many of you out there have added your children's names to your bank accounts or the deed to your real estate or your house? And people, you know, sheepishly raise their hand and I go, you just exposed your house, your assets, not only to you two, but now to your children. And I tell them horror stories of how people who did that and their child got in trouble with the IRS, and the IRS in about 20 seconds can do an asset search, and they go, this person owes $50,000 in back taxes, and they own 100% of a home over here. And the parents go, no, they don't. That's our home. We just added the child's name to avoid probate. Well, yeah, but it's under joint tenancy. Your child owns 100% of it, too. And so it's fair game to go after 100% of the equity because you added your child's name to that asset. Or sometimes an adult child gets in an accident and they sue over and above the liability limits, or maybe they let their insurance lapse. And so they come after and they do an asset search, a sharp law firm will just do an asset search and go, this child owns 100% of these assets and they have 100% of the money in this bank account. And the parents go, no, that's our checking account. Well, you added your child's name. See, they were trying to do it to avoid probate, but they created tons of exposure. Does that make sense? Another problem, by the way, is if you just throw your kids' names on some of those deeds and everything, and the IRS finds out about it, you may be subject to a gift tax. Because as soon as you do that, you sort of gifted that to your child. And maybe you should have paid a gift tax when you did that because you did not file a gift tax return or whatever. You gave more than the annual limit or whatever. So I have seen the IRS come in and charge 37%. And I remember years ago, they ended up having to pay back taxes with penalties and interest because they added their kids' names to these real estate holdings and they didn't file a gift tax return. Folks, be careful. Don't just go out there and say, oh, we're so clever. Let's add our children's names to all of our deeds and our bank accounts, and we just solved who gets what when we die. No, you're creating more problems than you're solving. I would recommend, frankly, if you have rental income properties, that you not only have trusts, but if you have real estate holdings or even a boat, I would recommend you insure those properties, and you have up to the limit in an umbrella policy. It's well worth it, and it's not that expensive. But I would recommend each of your real estate rental properties be in a separate LLC, and that you keep it mortgaged to the hilt, and you keep the equity over somewhere separate, liquid. And I'll share in the next segments where I keep the liquid cash instead of building up inside of a real estate property. But see, who's going to sue you for your real estate equity if it's not there? Okay. And so you want to protect it with a limited liability company. And if they sue you, the most they can get is whatever's in that LLC. If you own all of your properties under one LLC, it's all fair game.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.